Welcome to UCCF's Christian Persuaders podcast, a series of interviews with people from around the world gifted and passionate about communicating and defending the Christian gospel. For more information about UCCF, Christian Persuaders, and more episodes from this podcast, do go to uccf.org.uk/Christian-Persuaders. Well, today I'm up in the attic of the Damaris headquarters here in Southampton, talking to Nick Pollard, who was the founder of Damaris. Damaris, very briefly, is...
Well, it's based on Quentin Tarantino's famous statement that cinema is the new church. People are not going to church, but they are going to cinema.
True.
A lot of similarities. Okay. Cinema is a place people go. There's a story told from the front. It contains various underlying beliefs and values. It shapes people's thinking. People sit there in a community. They experience together, laugh together, cry together, and then they go out and they are transformed, they are changed. A lot of similarities. And what we're doing is trying to help people, particularly non-Christian people, to explore spiritual and moral issues in general, Christian faith in particular, through the latest films, music and TV.
Wow, brilliant. And that's available on your website?
Yeah, damaris.org, loads and loads of resources. A lot of partnership with film companies, increasingly partnership with film companies, where they commission us to create resources for films as they come out in the cinema.
Brilliant. Let's take a step back, though. I have a feeling we'll be talking about atheist school lectures and Hare Krishnas and Bath, but your sort of personal story, how did you get involved with this kind of thing? Why did you end up here?
Well, I was, as a young person, I was brought up in the Anglican Church, went to church regularly because I sang in the choir, but somehow I never understood what the gospel was. Now, actually, after I became a Christian, I went back to the Anglican Church. I found it was all there in the liturgy, and I love it now. My favourite service is the 8 o'clock communion. I can do the whole liturgy off by heart. It's all there, but somehow I hadn't seen it. Then I kind of went in my early teens. I then started saying, well, there must be other ways, and started searching for other answers to life and exploring. And I explored a whole lot of different religious beliefs, philosophical beliefs, looking for truth, really. Mm-hmm. And no matter what happened, I wanted to find out about it.
Mm-hmm. And where did you look then?
Well, all sorts of ways. You mentioned about the Hare Krishna people. We're living in Bath, and the Hare Krishna people started dancing down the street and chanting, and everyone was trying to move away from them. Apart from me, I was moving towards them. I went straight towards them, wanted to get their literature, wanted to find out. And through talking to people and through reading and exploring, and I came to the conclusion, reluctantly, that the gospel was true, that actually Jesus is who he claimed to be. And I didn't want to believe that. I didn't want to accept it. But the more I looked at the evidence, the more I came to the conclusion that was true.
Was there a clincher? I mean...
No, I wouldn't say there's one thing. It's a combination of multiple things. Fundamentally, of course, you know, all religions and philosophies are based upon men and women claiming to point the way to God or to fulfillment or to happiness or whatever, however they describe it. And then I couldn't get away from the fact that actually Christian faith was based upon this man who claimed to be God, not just a man pointing the way to God or pointing the way to fulfillment, but actually God himself. So mm-hmm. Is that true? And I investigated. I couldn't get away from the fact that actually mm-hmm. this was true. But that wasn't the end of my search. That was just the beginning of the big question then of, was I prepared for the moral change? And I realized here I was, you know, a teenager, 15 years old, lot of opportunities, lots of things, very attractive. And realizing that actually, if the gospel is true, if Jesus is Lord and King, then he's the rightful ruler of my life too. And that means lots of things that I would need to hand over to God. Struggled with that for actually as long as the intellectual struggle. Mm-hmm. I struggled. I mean, of course, looking back on it now, it wasn't very long. It's probably, you know, 6 months. 6 months of intellectual searching and then 6 months of moral heart searching. But when you're 15, that seems like a lifetime.
Now, I have friends who became Christians when they were teenagers, but they didn't go on to write books called Evangelism Made Slightly Less Difficult or found organisations engaging with culture. So why did you carry on in that particular direction?
It's a great mystery to me why so many Christians are not enthusiastic about evangelism. Mm-hmm. You know, I am just That's my whole. That's all I want to do. I get evangelist itch. If I'm not doing evangelism for a while, I start going door to door. I can't help it. And I remember that I just became a Christian, and so that I became a Christian on Sunday night. Actually, I can remember exactly where I was at the time. I then was at school and immediately talking on to my friends, some of my friends, about the gospel and helping them to explore and think about it. And then Saturday came, and normally I'd lie in bed on Saturday, and I thought, no, I'm going to go downtown. I got hold of some Christian tracts, and I thought, well, this is where all the Christians will be, of course, because we're all excited and enthusiastic about the gospel, so all the Christians will be down there giving out leaflets, talking to people about the gospel. I got there, centre of Bath, lots of non-Christians doing their shopping and things. No Christians engaged in evangelism. I can work it out. I thought, oh, they must be in Bristol. I thought, you know, they'll be somewhere else today. And then when I went to church the next day and started talking to Christians, I found that actually lots of Christians don't like doing this. And they find it very difficult. Well, I found it very difficult.
So you found it difficult, but you learned. Who did you learn from, or what did you learn?
Lots of different people. Worked with in a church setting where we had to kind of really learn by the fly by the seat of our pants with our passion for mission. My wife and I took over a small youth group in church. We'd moved to Southampton at that stage, and there were about five young people in the youth group. But we then said, look, we really want to reach people outside, large council estates around. We put on these open youth activities. We ended up with a youth group of 300 people, which was three times the size of the church. Thankfully, they never all came at the same time. We would have had trouble if they'd all arrived at the same time. That we were just learning by the seat of our pants, really. Then got involved in Mission England, and then the Billy Graham Association asked us to join the association. Learned a lot there from people about approaches to outreach and stuff like that. But then also became very challenged about all sorts of questions about whether it's the style of stand up and speak at a big event is actually as appropriate today and would work and so on and so forth. Lots of questions. Left the association and worked with John Chapman for a while, Canon John Chapman, Saint Chapo as some of us call him. Learned a lot from him, particularly about expository evangelism. I was used to expository preaching, where you're teaching the Bible sequentially through to Christians, but what I saw him doing was expository evangelism, teaching the Bible verse by verse to non-Christians. However, of course, lots of people are not at that stage.
Right.
So he also did lots and lots of open debate, open dialogue.
Uh-huh.
And when I saw that combination of the open debate, open dialogue, working with people who are just not interested in hearing the gospel, but do want to argue, and then combination with, well, those of you who are interested and want to find out more, we're going to be working through Luke's gospel tonight at this event. Do you want to come along? And the combination, learned a lot from him. And that actually is a lot of the model of the ministry that I developed. Went on to be a university missioner, did 66 university and college missions, then needed half an hour to lie down in a darkened room.
Well, this room is quite dark, but you're not lying down. Now, you mentioned debates then. Any recent debates that you've been involved with?
Yes, since my wife and I founded Damaris, actually a lot of our work is now creating resources and training and supporting other people. So do a lot of that, and much less of actual speaking and debating myself. But I still do some of it. And a couple of months ago, a sixth form college actually asked me if I would do a debate there with their professor her head of philosophy in this particular college. And that was absolutely packed, full. She was really trying to argue the completely inappropriateness of believing in God. And I was trying to help students to think and evaluate and question that. Spent a lot of time actually trying to help people with their critical thinking skills, and it became a bit difficult at some stages where she would be saying things about philosophy that were actually not very rigorous, and trying to help actually develop more rigor in the actual philosophy.
For example?
Well, she would say things like, well, of course you can't prove that God exists. And I said, well, you know, I'm surprised as a philosopher, you're just very loosely using the word proof. We need to know, what do we mean by proof? Are we talking about deductive proof, two premises leading to a conclusion where we can say this and this, therefore With certainty, we can come to that conclusion. Are we talking about inductive proof, where we're looking at a range of different types of evidence and then leading to a probability conclusion? Are we talking about abductive proof, or abductive, where it's argument to best explanation? Here's a set of data. What is the best explanation?
Was she abducted by your best explanation?
Well, I don't know. But I was just trying to help us see, you know, you actually, if you're saying we're looking for a deductive proof of God, this and this, therefore we can be absolutely certain that God exists. I say, well, actually, you're applying a criteria of proof that we don't use in normal life. Most of our situations in life, we don't do that. You know, when you sit on a chair, are you absolutely certain that that chair is going to hold you? You know, well, actually, you take a step of faith on the basis of reasonable evidence. When you eat food, you know, is that poisoned? Well, probably not. But, you know, you take a step of faith on the basis of reasonable evidence. And that's all we're asking people to do with God, is to look at the evidence and then take a step of faith on the basis of reasonable evidence. And it seems to me inappropriate when people say, no, you've got to have absolute proof before you become a Christian.
Did you have to prepare for this occasion? Did you have to bring a sort of set piece presentation?
Just, no, it was like a 2-minute introduction and then questions from the floor. So a lot of that. I mean, I am very, very committed to preparation, very committed to study, and delighted to see, you know, I spend a lot of my time training other people, and I talk about sometimes about prophetic study. I believe in prophetic study. That is, in the early days when you're starting to do outreach ministry, where particularly where it's a question and answer session, and you don't know what questions are going to be asked, you can't go in there with everything right at your fingertips. As you get more and more used to it, you have more and more knowledge to draw upon, and you can take any question, and you know what to do with it. But in the early days, you can't. And so I believe very much in prophetic study. I used to spend a lot of time studying before I was going to do a particular debate or question and answer session. And I'd be really praying, God, please show me what I need to know for this situation. And remarkable, I tell stories in my book of remarkable situations where God has led me to study a particular area. And then I go, and then that question comes up. And I think, well, that's, you know, I'm just so thankful for that.
I mean, so did you refer to a library? I mean, where are you studying, or what kind of resources are available, I guess, for people?
Well, I'm old, so this is in the days before even the internet. But I would study from books, mainly from books. Now, of course, there's a lot of resources on the internet where people can study and look at, you know, it might be, you know, a particular question, you know, that you think, you know, well, God leads you to think, you know, to study that particular issue. And it'd be remarkable how you would find how opportunities come up. I was doing a thing a while ago, training young people understanding and reaching Muslims. And I spent a whole lot of stuff teaching a whole lot of stuff about understanding and reaching Muslims. And then there was lunch break. They went out for lunch and they came back. A group of them came back and said, we had lunch. We sat down and we found we were sat next to some Muslims in the canteen. And we started talking to them. And everything we'd learnt this morning, we were able to then use in the lunch. I said, yeah, that's the way that God works. Mm. You know, you do the study, you submit yourself to learning these things. God will provide opportunities for you.
Are these some of the principles that you include in Evangelism Made Slightly Less Difficult, or what else
is
in there?
Yes, well, Evangelism Made Slightly Less Difficult, I wrote during my time as a university missioner, I refer there to, well, perhaps at the beginning, I refer to 4 different types of people that there are that I meet when I go in to do a mission or wherever I am. 4 different types of people. There are those people who are just about ready to become Christians. They've got Christian friends who've been helping them to explore and think. And, you know, like I was when I got to that stage of actually, I knew it was true. I knew I needed to respond. What they need is someone to call them to commitment. And there's a part of evangelism which is very important to call people to commitment, call people to respond. Secondly, there are those people who are nowhere near ready to make a commitment because they got lots of questions and doubts. And we're in the area there of apologetics, giving a reasoned defense for our faith, helping people to explore those questions and answer those questions. Thirdly, there are those people who haven't yet got really well-formulated questions because they don't really know what the issue is, because they haven't really thought about God. Perhaps they've never read a gospel. Perhaps they've never really thought about Jesus and his claims and his life and his teaching. And so we're in the area there of proclamation, teaching them, helping them to understand the life and teaching of Jesus and that significance for us. Now, if everybody fitted in those three categories, that would be quite easy, wouldn't it? Because people want to hear about Jesus, we teach them about Jesus, then they got questions and doubts, and we help them to find answers to those questions, then we call them to commitment. And if everyone fitted in those three categories, we could, you know, reach the whole of them, all of your friends and contacts, you know, this morning and tomorrow start on India. The fact is, though, most people actually don't fit in those three categories. Most people fit in the fourth category. They're simply not interested. Quite happy for you, but I'm not interested. And that, then, how do we deal with those people? Well, in the book, I launched this concept that's been picked up by lots of different people called positive deconstruction. They were helping people to deconstruct their non-Christian worldviews to affirm the truth that is there, but also to help them to discover error such that they will want to hear about Jesus. And that's a lot of what we do in Damaris, helping people to explore ideas and then say, actually, this idea doesn't really hold together. I need to seek for something that does, and then begin to look at Jesus.
So if I'm thinking, ooh, I'd love to be able to do that better, to be able to observe and notice and listen and read and understand where my friends are, what would be my next step to grow?
Well, of course, I'm bound to say read the book. But Evangelism Made Slightly Less Difficult, published by IVP, and it's available in all libraries as well. You can just get it from a library if you don't want to buy it. And so the book will help you to understand that principle of it. And then our resources that we do in Damaris, damaris.org, helps people to explore those kind of questions. We took the name Damaris from the last verse of chapter 17 of the book of Acts. Paul is there in Athens and he's using the local poets, the local philosophers. If it was today, he would have used the latest films, music and TV to illustrate his talk. And as a result of that, some people said not interested. Some people said they were interested and would like to hear more. And then a few people became Christians, including a lady called Damaris. So that's what it's about. Damaris, example of someone who actually comes to faith through actually thinking about these issues in relation to the illustrations of contemporary popular culture and addressing them rigorously, thinking and exploring and investigating. And, you know, Paul's experience in Athens was a wonderful experience. You know, some people say he was a failure. Well, goodness me, they've never done any evangelism. You know, you always get people who say not interested. If you get some people who say I'm interested and want to find out more, and a few who become Christians, wow, that's fantastic.
Brilliant. Great. Well, that was your story, that's my story. We hope to hear lots more stories like that in the coming months and years. But thanks for talking to us, Nick.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of UCCF's Christian Persuaders podcast. For more information, go to uccf.org.uk.